This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 5th of January, 2022. Just to the top of the show once again, thank you for all of those who stepped up on Spotify and put out a rating for us. I did notice that. Appreciate it very much. And for those of you who have neglected to do so, please have a look. You just click on the show itself, and then on the menu, the dot, 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 you can rate the show. We appreciate your 5-star ratings. It helps bump us up in the rankings. And again, many thanks. And we've also seen a lot of reviews out on Apple, so that also helps as well. But turning to markets, we saw quite a session yesterday, quite a turn of events or change of pace, if you will, from that first session. And I think it looks like with the extension higher in yields, this is spooking many corners of the market, seems to be supporting others. I noticed financials were up quite strongly on the session yesterday, Peter, but all in all, and especially in that mega cap heavy and interest rate sensitive area, not a great session yesterday. Take us through your impressions and the implications of what you're seeing here.
Yeah, so it was quite a surprising session yesterday. Because I think of the magnitude. So yes, we are 18 basis points higher in the US 10-year yield, which is a sizable move if you look at the traditional 2-day move range we've had over the past year. So, but I don't think it can fully explain what happens. There is definitely just a broader rotation happening, I think, inside portfolios where investors are shifting away from an overly growth oriented focus on in their equity portfolios to blend more value, traditional pro-cyclical physical companies in their portfolio in the event that they are wrong on inflation. So you're clearly also seeing with yesterday's move a little bit steepening on the yield curve, you get financials suddenly moving quite aggressively, a couple of percent. But look at the performance table we have on our first slide. I mean, it's the divergence just year to date between the bubble stocks, e-commerce stocks, and versus travel, which is bouncing back because of Omicron and is news flow is better than expected. And you have commodities up there. It's just it's almost a 10 percentage point spread already in the first 3 days. You have to wonder whether it's a little bit too aggressive. I think if I was trading actively intraday these markets, I would probably be betting right now and here on a mean reversion very short term. I think longer term, if inflation sticks and we get to 2% in the US 10-year yield, I think there could be more casualties in these pockets, these growth pockets, because I think there will be a little bit more headwind to growth than what is initially priced in potentially this year. So let's see what happens. And I've put in on the next slide as well, slide 3. I've put in the ARK Innovation ETF, which you can see. I think that's probably the most traded vehicle that that expresses the growth speculative part of the market. It has almost one correlation to our own bubble basket. So, but our bubble basket is an inspirational list, whereas the ARK Innovation ETF is tradable both on the long and the short side of things. So, I think that's a beacon and something you should have on your watch list to understand what's going on in equities.
All right, cool. And we mentioned the interest rate sensitivity and yields, and those are a chief focus here as we've gotten underway in quite an interesting fashion on the treasury. So longer dated treasuries and in Europe on the bunds. And I put in bunds today just for a change of pace. That 10-year treasury benchmark almost reaching the 1.7% level, which was the high. So the pivot high back in October, and the year high for last year was 1.75%, very much in focus there. And if we look at German bunds, we actually are very close to the high since back in 2019. Which is around minus 6.5 basis points, if you can believe that. Those yields rising this morning to around minus 8 basis points. So watching the reactivity in interest rates markets around these very pivotal levels and to what degree that's going to crimp, again, interest rate sensitive sectors. And in FX, the interest rate sensitive currency with no peer is the Japanese yen these days. And it is really cratered here. The trend reading on our FX board, as you can see on slide 5, approaching 5. It's a pretty strong one. It means the yen is down across the board more or less. And no exception to that yesterday as it broke that pivot high of around 115. I'm forgetting what it was, 115.50 or 35 back in November. it accelerated through 116. It only came back because the treasury market sell-off eased as risk aversion came in yesterday. I'm really reluctant to sort of throw my weight into this move as being something we need to watch extend aggressively. I think it's very, you know, as the market, maybe you need to find its legs for another few days, maybe into next week. And I'm really curious to see how we react to the FOMC minutes tonight, and especially the first round of data from the U.S. On Friday, jobs, earnings, et cetera, to see if this yield move extends and can continue to push the Japanese yen lower. One thing that really sticks out here is that extreme yen weakness with where the Chinese renminbi has traded after its very strong move in the latter half of next year. That divergence to me is very remarkable. I don't recall anything similar to that since back when we were looking at the Chinese renminbi revaluation that happened back in 2015. So consider that there is an extreme strain in that particular spread. Does it point to China, you know, needing to eventually move to weaken its currency? It could do so, but I think it only will do so in the event we see weakening commodity prices. And on that front, we're not exactly seeing that at the moment, at least not in oil. We're sort of pushing the upper end of the envelope. What is your focus today and then the rest of the week in commodity markets?
Well, first of all, John, it's most certainly the energy space where we saw the OPEC Plus agree to extend their production increases for February by another 400,000 barrels. The market took that quite well. We're testing $80 resistance in Brent this morning. And also, we got the data from the American Petroleum Institute pointing to another big drop in U.S. Crude stocks last week. So that's all supporting. And the main reason why I think the impact of the 400,000 barrel increase is not seen is basically the fact that quite a few of the producers are struggling increasingly to live up to or fulfill their quotas. We've got Nigeria, Angola, Equatorial Guinea, as I put into the small insert here on slide seven, but also even countries like Russia, their production was flat in December, so it could indicate that we're not getting the 400,000 barrels, perhaps only half of that. So that's underpinning the price.
Yeah, and then you mentioned we bring Russia into the conversation. Looking at the Russian ruble this morning, I noticed it was towards the lows of the cycle, and you see the headline that these gas supplies are not being delivered through Ukraine, as far as I understand. You know, the pressure here is remarkable, and this is just ahead of these talks that are supposed to take place, from what I understand, starting the 9th, which is a Sunday, in Geneva, and extending it to the 10th between Russia and NATO. So playing hardball, it seems, on this gas supply issue, and perhaps on Nord Stream 2, for whatever reason, this gas issue just won't go away.
Absolutely. We are up for third day. Still have to remember we dropped 65% top to bottom before New Year, but we're steadily rising again, trading close to 100 euros on the front month's TTF, European benchmark gas. And it is, as you say, John, the flows from Russia just simply not living up to expectations. We are seeing no flows coming into Germany from Poland. We're seeing reduced flows going through Ukraine. And it's happening at a time where temperatures just following a pretty mild spell over New Year look set to drop again. So it's raising once again the concerns about storage. Looking at slide six, just keep an eye on the March-April spread. That's basically from when we go from winter to spring. That's really showing that the spread between those two contracts will indicate the stress in the market, basically how worried the market is about storage or lack of gas towards the end of the winter heating period. So that's a key guide. But also, I think this gas volatility is creating a lot of stress within the European energy companies. Yesterday, we saw Uniper in Germany getting a 10 billion euro loan from its Finnish parent Fortum, basically just to cover margin calls. And this, they're not alone in this. So we're seeing a lot of stress among these companies across Europe, and it's something that we need to keep an eye on, because some of these margin calls are quite enormous right now relative to the kind of cash they're holding. So not only are we feeling it as consumers, but companies are feeling the stress as well.
All right, Peter, you've whipped up quite a doozy of a headline here. I really like this one on slide eight. We're talking about EVs, and I love the perspective you had on the internal meeting we had this morning on just the whole valuation of the space. It's not just about Tesla, it's about the whole space. So take us through what you're talking about here on slide 8. What is the graveyard of casualties in EVs?
Yeah, so we are on slide 8, by the way, in today's slide deck. And in the upper left-hand corner, you have the combined market value of the 11th largest internal combustion engine producers and the 11 largest pure electric vehicle makers. And you can see the combined market value, if you add those two lines, is roughly just, is actually above 2.5 trillion right now. And we came from a situation just around $700 billion in market cap. So we're around 3.5 times higher in combined market value across this industry. And at the same time, as you can see in the lower left-hand side corner, we have global new passenger car registrations. Obviously, the entire industry is more than just passenger cars, but it's a pretty fairly large segment driving the needle for many of these car makers. And you can see we have basically been in a drawdown for 3 years. So the global registration of cars has come down for almost 3 years straight. We had a little bit rebound during the pandemic, but the overall trend, as you can see, it's down again. I suspect a lot of consumers are holding back with their purchases. Who wants to buy a gasoline car with all these bans coming around the world? I mean, it can really, you know, lowers the value of your purchase. So and that's also, I think, why the secondary market is so hot right now, is because of this transition effect. And talking about it in a broader terms, John, I think we need to set the stage. So you had Ford Motor out yesterday. You know, the stock was up a lot, as you can see here. It was trading as below $5 at the low point during the pandemic, and it traded above $24. And you have these headlines that, oh, even if Ford is up this much, there's still a lot of room for the stock to go even higher. So the optimism around cars and Ford Motor yesterday was just spectacular, complete opposite of what we saw with technology stocks. Just to set the stage, so the Ford is expected to do 150,000 deliveries of EVs, mostly the Ford Lightning, the Ford F 150 Lightning version. And then they expected to do 600,000 deliveries by 2024. Just for comparison, Tesla is expected to do somewhere around 1.5 and 1.6 million this year alone already, and growing fast. You have Volkswagen, Toyota also coming into the game. But my sense is that a lot of the traditional car makers, they are really behind the curve. And how can we make sense of these high valuations? Either the future car industry will be extremely much more profitable, and there will be more room for more players in the future. I think it's quite unlikely, but maybe I'm wrong on this. Or secondly, either Tesla and the other EV makers are outrageously overvalued, or the traditional car makers are overvalued because the traditional analysts are not seeing the Nokia moment coming. So that's why I think either way, I don't think the industry can support all this market valuation. And that's why I think it will be a graveyard of casualties that are coming. So I think if you want to participate in this industry, you have to be extremely smart and do your due diligence. You can do the direct exposure and this part of the value chain with buying the car makers, but I have argued extensively over the past couple of months that I think you're running a lower risk by looking at the lithium carbonate miners, copper producers, battery makers, etc., because they will win regardless of who wins in the car industry. Whereas the car industry, there will be a lot of casualties.
Yeah, interesting idea there. Whether the car can become a platform, sort of like a mobile phone or not, but we'll have to watch that space. I like the perspective there. And then we muffed it a bit on some earnings dates this week. We'll take us through what's going on there. Part of it with Bloomberg to blame, as far as I understand.
I totally blame Bloomberg. No, just kidding. Well, to be fair,
they did have the wrong date for Jeffries.
They did. We love Bloomberg, by the way. But a lot of their earnings dates, it's algorithmic, it's code basically that scans through the different investment relationship sites of all these companies and pulling out the dates. And to the extent where you cannot pull a date, the algorithm makes an estimate or a guesstimate of what the reporting date will be based on prior dates. And obviously, I think Jefferies probably had the initially announced yesterday as a reporting date, but it has been postponed. So it will be Wednesday next week on the 12th. Teledyne Technologies, on the other hand, was completely wrong. And I just rechecked because we had a client that mentioned it. And I rechecked it. And if based on prior Q4 earnings releases, it's more likely to report late January or early February. So, but today, if we can trust the reporting dates. We have RPM International, which is a specialty chemical company in the US reporting, and it's not a huge name. So I don't want to talk too much about this company. I think we'll wait for tomorrow and we can talk about Walgreens, because I think that company is much larger in terms of footprint and could tell us a little bit about, you know, consumer sentiment and the underlying growth rate in the retail sector of the US.
Yeah, it's so tricky there also on the activity level on the ground, because, well, first of all, we had the ISM manufacturing for December out yesterday. It was a bit lower than expected, 58.7 versus 60 expected and 61.1 the prior month. These levels near 60 are extraordinarily hard to maintain for a string of months in a row, it has to be said. So 58.7 is still a very strong reading. It just means you're expanding at a slightly slower pace than you were previously. The narrative, the spin out of this was it showing that a little bit like the supply side is easing somewhat. You do have prices paid dropping to 68.2, still a very, very hot level by historic comparisons, but not anything resembling the galloping pace of price rises in the prior months, which were around 82.4 for the prior month. And then there was some discussion in the analysis that there was a drop in delivery times. So there's that. And then you have this, the market clearly looking through. We saw in some of your equity theme baskets, the travel and commodities, et cetera, really doing well yesterday. And the market in general has been doing quite well until yesterday, as we're looking through the Omicron numbers and seeing a nice recovery. But if you look at things like the actual booking in restaurants in the US, the open table reservations, these have dropped off quite badly. People are being a little bit more cautious. So we may see some weakness in some of the January numbers, at least in jobs. I don't know, maybe even into February. It's just so difficult to look through all this and gauge all of this stuff. But I think in general, the market is going to be clear of Omicron. Certainly the economy is going to be clear of Omicron quite quickly. And the market is sort of positioned for that. But let's look at what we have on today's calendar. The FOMC minutes are always important, especially after the Fed has just executed an about face and has very much declared itself an inflation fighting central bank. To what degree is there dissent? To what degree is other policy options been brought into the conversation? Things like balance sheet reduction, those kinds of things will be poured over in the minutes. But it's really the Friday jobs report and how the market absorbs that, especially at the long end of the yield curve. As we've noted, we're at very twitchy levels technically if these yields continue to rise. And among the inflationary pressure parts of that, of course, are the average hourly earnings and to what degree these are beating expectations. That is that on Friday. And then I have to emphasize, we have to watch what's going on with Russia over Ukraine, as Russia and NATO are set for a couple of days of talks in Geneva starting on January 9th. Today, we also have the ADP employment change expected out at above 400K, but that would be a four-month low, but still a pretty strong pace of jobs gains if it's anywhere near that. All right, that is a wrap for today. Let's see how the market shapes up, and we'll be back tomorrow with Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.